Okay, everybody, welcome to this, our Paper Profits Mastermind Group Case Study Corner. This is a share that we like to do, one of our monthly sessions that we do where we present not only our case studies, but recent case studies from the group. This month, we just had two fresh ones that we'll share, and I had another one that I just did not have time to write up, and it was a lease that we just got done on a property that we foreclosed from second position. And so we'll definitely be presenting that in the very near future and how that all turned out. But we've got two fresh case studies and we're excited to share those with you. But before we get going on that, let's just jump through some real quick announcements. There's just a quick list of what we're going to cover today and jump right in. So official welcome to recent new members. We have one more that didn't quite make the cutoff that'll be joining us next week. And so, but welcome to you guys, Philip, Mario, Harvey, and Greg. We're excited to have you guys. So we definitely, a lot of you, we've already reached out, had that fast start call. Still need to have it with a couple of you as well. So punch and get going where you need to get going. And we look forward to having you guys get to meet everybody else in the group. So a little recap here for you on Workouts Wednesday. We had a full house and several tuning in on the live cast that we did on the Workouts Wednesday at our office. We always love feedback. So if there were certain things that you guys really liked about that or other topics, please make sure and let your voice be heard on these surveys that are going to be coming out on what we'll cover at this upcoming Workouts Wednesday, as well as the workshop. We've got a format. We had a huddle there with the executive team on some enhancements. Definitely had some good recommendations and feedback from you guys. And we just, again, I actually had someone come up and tell me that it was a 10 and a half, and I was, that really let the air out of my improvement. So we're definitely looking forward to our upcoming workshop. And we've had several people that couldn't make it that are planning on being with us in October. So we'll look forward to having them with us. And there was some great networking for everybody who attended. So, and speaking of some announcements there, we actually revealed Mr. X. A lot of you guys were, you know, there to get to meet Mr. Philip Pei out of Bountiful, Utah. And a lot of the feedback was very, very, very positive. And if you haven't had a chance yet to read Philip's bio, John, cue that up and let's just make sure it's either below this. We'll have it on the overall website, but we'll also have it below this particular video so you guys can know just what that means to you in terms of getting these distressed assets back to performing status. That's how Philip has spent the analysis, and you know, just we're very excited, our whole team.
All right, very good. Well, that was exciting. You gotta love technology. So I'm just gonna back up real quick so you can hear everything, and we'll get that on the recording, and I won't go too fast, but we'll just do a recap. So we were talking about Mr. X revealed at our last workshop, Philip Pace. We're excited to have him on board with us. What does that mean to you guys exactly? Well, it means a number of things. One, we'll have him involved with us on our training calls. We'll also have him live at our workshops. We'll also have him live at the mastermind special functions and events that we do. And we'll also be adding another key person to the team to help with acquisitions, disposition, due diligence, you know, soup to nuts as far as collections and servicing goes. So we're excited for his level of experience and what he brings to the table, and happy to offer that the years of wisdom and training to you guys. So we're very, very excited for that. John's working on the workshop from recordings from the last one that we had. You'll be able to download the audios and the PowerPoint presentations. As far as the videos go, you need to watch that from your handheld device or a tablet or your computer. So we're always excited to provide all those to you that couldn't make it live with us. Of course, we always miss you. when you're not there live, but we understand that schedule doesn't always permit. So please save the date for the next workshop. That'll be October 8th and 9th in San Diego. It'll be on non-performing notes. We'll have a few surprises and goodies and an RSVP link we send out. Again, a membership benefit is that there's no additional cost to come, but we welcome you live. Would be preferred so we can have some great networking and collaboration, but if you can't, we understand. We'll announce the venue too here shortly as we finalize that. And be on the lookout too. We're going to publish the remaining calendar for the rest of the year of events that we're hosting as well as ones that we're attending that you may want to join us at. And so we'll publish that in the members area. We have a bunch of loans that we've recently boarded and have collateral for. If you're interested in looking at that information, or if you'd like have some specific criteria or want a pool of loans, please email me directly. That's aaron@capstonefundinggroup.com, and also include your funding range and what you're looking for. Then we can see if we can accommodate that. What I'm about to walk us through is the process and how that will look and what you can expect and how that will flow. So these particular loans are non-performing junior liens. They're recently boarded. As part of the due diligence process, we're going to provide you with soft copies of the mortgage or deed of trust, the note, credit report, and then upon funding, after you funded, we'll provide the TLO skip tracing detail as well. So we're happy to get all that information so you can do proper due diligence and give that to you. There will also be a special members only price there as a membership benefit. And we do have, you know, some preferred pricing before we, so a couple things really, preferred, you know, look, first priority looking at our assets before we roll it out to the rest of our list, and also preferred pricing. So we're excited for that. Here's what you can expect as far as looking at the data tape. There will be a loan number. There will be the borrower's name. Any comments or actions that we've done internally on the file, so you may see something like, you know, TILA was recently sent out. All these, just so you know, the RESPAs have been sent out, and the majority of them, TILAs, have been sent out. If we have any other actions that we've taken on the file, then we'll provide that in that column as well. We'll have the borrower's social, the property address, the city, state, and zip, the member purchase price, the UPB, the collateral status, the assignment of mortgage, the allonges, note date, and then the junior monthly payment. The other information that we'll provide is the senior lien information, specifically who the senior lien holder is, the status of the senior according to when we last looked it up. Of course, this is, you know, you're responsible for your own due diligence. We'll also provide the senior lien balance if we have that, and then the senior lien payment. And if we pulled any, done an AVM or used RPR, then we'll provide the fair market value. So any of the other data that I have listed here would be information that we highly recommend and strongly suggest that you do your due diligence on, some of which we may have provided, but I'm not wanting to represent that those will be filled out. So, you know, foreclosure, BK, if the senior was modified, property condition, the rent, if it's listed for sale, if it's owner-occupied, and a link to the information. So, and then what I took a screenshot below that in Google Drive, so we would share over the folders with the appropriate loan number, and you will be able to access the collateral files and credit reports within those given folders, and that will be shared out to everyone as well. So the other thing that we have is we talked a little bit about the workshop. We had our indicative bid accepted on a pool of 148 junior liens. We've received some of the, and this is a direct trade that we're doing with a couple different servicers, and we're completing our due diligence, and we'll be going through the collateral files and the pay histories and all that stuff that they're sending over to us. That funding will be the week of September 6th, and then we will be looking to offer that to the group members. There is a limited amount of performing and reperforming junior liens as part of this mix. For the most part, it is a non-performing pool, but that will be, if you're interested in any of those performing, reperforming, that will just be on a first-come, first-served basis as well, just like any of the other assets that we have. So we're excited to get that out to you guys, and hopefully we have many more trades that we're doing right behind that. It looks like...
Hey, can you hear me okay, Aaron?
I can hear you fine. I had another link, but it looks like you pulled that out. So.
Well, I was just going to bring up a comment here that was typed into the question box, and I completely agree. Based on prior note sellers that we've worked with, I had a comment here that said, servicer notes history, ? You know, and it's one of those things where we thought the exact same thing until we saw the disc with all of the servicer notes on them, like, blew our mind, you know, just that it's available. And we knew it was available, but whether the previous note sellers actually wanted to take the time and effort to put it together to get it to you. So we're pretty excited about dealing with a couple of new sources that that deal professionally and in the process of helping you do your full due diligence. So we actually do have full servicer notes history on this particular pool of non-performing and re-performing seconds in there. So we're excited about that. So I relate to the exact comment that was put in the question box. So thank you. Any other questions on that, guys, before we keep going? I'm monitoring the question box as we get going. And Aaron, if you want to pass the presenter back to me, I can run with that and we'll get going.
There'll also be in the process, there'll be a special URL that will be sent out that you can make your bids, and for the assets that you want, it'll be just a contact information form and some other information we need for loan transfers and servicing. So we'll send that out as the process goes. And I'm almost completed working with Kristen on making sure we have all the collateral files accessible for you guys. And I'll do a training webinar call this week and record it and then push that out, and maybe some of you can join live so you can access the notes that we do have available. So we're excited for you guys to look at that. Oh, there you go. Okay, so capstonefundinggroup.com/asset purchase.
So you got it there? Okay, so we've got that. You're able to pull up the link. And just a quick review, you guys. This is a process. We do have some new members on, so I'll just, you know, put this up there real quick. But we do have a process whereby those hotline submissions get copied to the entire executive team. And we'll actually add Philip to that, so he's actually getting the hotline submission. So we're all seeing them at the various times when we actually get back to them, and we'll be able to answer and reply to all so everyone sees the answer. And then where it's suitable, we'll actually bring that hotline submission back to the group for training. So the asset management and workout hotline, we strongly suggest you guys do that, and there's the link. And if for any reason that gets changed, we move over to the notetools.com platform, we'll actually notify you guys about that. So very good. Again, any questions, type them in as we move on here. So a couple of quick comments there, just as a reminder. We'll get back to you guys within 24 to 48 hours, if not sooner. Our goal is actually sooner. And wherever possible, we'll actually, if there needs to be a phone call, we'll pick that up and get to you. So very good. Maybe you can just monitor the questions as I get going through this case study. So are you there, Kristen? Let's make sure Kristen's available to chime in, because we're going to have a answer, Kristen. It looks like you're off mute on the control panel, so we'll need you to be able to type in. So what we're going to do, just to set up today's case study corner, we actually are going to share two case studies that we bought a portfolio coming up on think we're approaching 17 or 18 months here. And these two particular assets were assets that we kind of put towards the bottom tier of the portfolio in terms of which ones we would focus on first, and we'll get into that in just a minute and tell you a little bit about why. And you know, we put them on the shelf, so to speak. And what we want to do is have you guys kind of go through the mindset with us, and there's reasons we did that, and what we'll be able to help out with between Kristen and Philip on future trainings is just some of the reasons and some of the options that you have when you're dealing with certain assets like this. So again, these are seconds. We've just had some new trades come in on first we're excited about, because we do want to buy more first. If you guys have first out there that you need, obviously you guys have first crack at them, but if you need help taking stuff down, please get in touch with us. We're ready to do that. So let's jump into the first one, and hopefully Kristen gets her sound worked out here shortly, because we will need her. So for those of you guys who are in the workshop, a few of the numbers, we've just updated the numbers, and I wanted to run through this real quick so it'll be a little bit of a review, and then we'll go to the second one, which will be great for you guys, but also for the new people. We've got several people on here that weren't able to be at the workshop. We want to talk to you about this one, and this was a property that was upside. Does it look like there's some emotional equity? It's the house on the right there with the two cars in the garage. And, you know, 2006 was the year built. Nice looking little house, right? But as you go ahead and look at what we knew before we bought, type in that question box as you're looking at this screenshot. What's the problem? What's the problem if you were wanting to really get after it and be aggressive on collecting on this particular asset? What's one of the things you might be concerned about that might, you know, determine how aggressive you were going to be? See if anyone got it here. Throw it in there. Thank you. Yeah, exactly. It's upside down. There's no equity. So there's aggressive. If you want to get aggressive on this, if the borrower did not contact you back, which the borrower did not, we did our initial borrower connect campaign, which is in the members area, and we went through all of those steps in efforts to get the person to contact us and work something out voluntarily with. But you can see there at the time funding due diligence, these are the things we knew, right? We were able to go in, check pay search. These are all things we do prior to funding. We checked to see if it was listed. It wasn't listed. That was the FICO. Pre-funding, decent credit, but look at what we found out here. Taxes were current, and there was no NOD filed. The property was not in foreclosure. But the interesting thing that we found out, that there were two mortgages. You there, Kristen?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Just heard her kind of. Yep, finally, we can hear you. Great. Great to have you. Everybody drunk. Anyway, we're just going through this, Chris. I'm sure you've probably seen the screen and you just were having problems getting your sound going. But yeah. One of the things that we always look for in our pre-funding due diligence is if this property, we're trying to find out before we even buy it, if it's owner-occupied or tenant-occupied. And maybe just comment on some of the things that we do, specifically what's on the screen, and how that's beneficial in knowing and really affecting the process by which you're going to go after to try and collect on that.
Yeah, so the tape and the credit report are key because those are the two items that we have before we purchase, right? So with those two items, I kind of nail down, do they have a separate mailing address? Does the credit report a current address that's not my property? Those are indicators that it's an owner.
Very cool. And I noticed you made a comment that, you know, the two pieces of information we have, again, emphasizing that's with note sellers we've dealt with in the past, we do have a lot more additional information at our fingertips pre-funding in our due diligence process now on these things we're looking at. So we're excited about that. So tenant occupied.
So excited.
Go ahead.
So excited. I can't.
That is.
How excited I am.
Okay. It looks like we're having a little problems on sound. Chime in there, guys, if sound is still on the out. I apologize. We were going to double check. I'm even hardwired through fiber optic that we pay a lot per month for, and that's very frustrating. So let me know how the sound's coming in. So anyway, what we know today, right? So again, we had worked through, and a lot of you have gotten the email updates from us and saw how the passive income was climbing, not just on this portfolio, but other assets that we have, both firsts and seconds and land contracts. But a big part of what we've been able to do so quickly has been in this particular portfolio. And so this asset was sitting on the shelf, right? And so now, as we kind of updated values here over the last year, what's happened? So you can see the position has changed. And if you scroll down just a little bit there, you can see the refreshed FICO score. So it's gone from 625 to 666. She's paying all her bills except for us. And obviously it's been charged off and we're not reporting, but there's some numbers for you. And so important, where we looked at this when Kristen came back to me and said, hey, we've got some equity here, you know, that's where we kind of changed our position and said, let's get aggressive. And we initially, which we'll talk about in just a minute, kind of changed our tune on this. So just go to the next slide. So just before we go in to kind of show you a little bit about the reason for default and when Kristen finally, when the Borrower Connect purchase price was at, and you can see there, lender fees, those are fees that we incurred, typically have an loan modification fee and a processing fee, and you determine what those are. So all in currently, you see our number there. If we have to go all the way in Georgia on this, it's quite pricey, and we're hoping to avoid that, and it looks like we have. We've got the signed agreement, which we'll talk about in just a second. So anyway, you'll see there how that number goes, and that pushes our total outstanding amount due up almost to $49,000. So Kristen, talk about this, because this was something where once we sent out the initial letters and we hit it. I know we've got some timelines here, which we'll just kind of show on the screen for people so that it's available in the training archive. You'll see play by play, but talk to us about this and the attorney. We've got a Vietnamese-speaking only borrower who has a power of attorney to an attorney friend, and basically this attorney volunteered like everything, which is not normal.
Yeah, and it was the same attorney that she uses throughout all of her loans, because I noticed the original, the deed, was also signed with the power of attorney. So it kind of, it solidified that theory of the communication barrier that I was dealing with, because you only know what people tell you, and a large percentage of the time it's not true. So with that being said, I kind of had to nail that down with. So bottom line, 720.
Let me back up really quick, because you said something really important. You, the power of attorney and the attorney's name that you're talking to, you were looking for some congruency. You know, like we've heard and we know this, that it's seldom that borrowers tell the truth, and when one actually does, you know, we get jaded in this business, right? But the borrower actually tells the truth. In this case, mention one more time how you were able to confirm the congruency that this was the representative throughout. Is this all the way back to the purchase deed is what you were saying that you found?
Yeah. I kind of dipped into seeing the docs, and if there was some, you know, a language, maybe a translation or something, I just dug deep, and that's when I looked at the original collateral and I saw that a power of attorney was present, and then I deep dived, and it's the same exact person that I'm actually working with. So that's how I came to the conclusion. But, you know, here nor there, I still was collecting on the debt, so it wasn't going to stop me just because of the language barrier. And all the docs that she did sign were in English, and all my internal demands went out in English. And the day before it expired, I got a letter of representation and a power of attorney from the attorney. So something I sent, she could understand.
Very good. Just a few points on this slide that's on the screen now. Again, Borrower Connect campaign, all the details in the members area. John, maybe just link it up again in the recording so that it's there. But reason for default, it's an important little term there you guys understand. And you're really trying to determine, go ahead.
Oh, also, what I found that there was an occupancy rider, and that's also another trigger that it could be potentially a non-owner occupied, or they purchased it as a non-owner.
Okay, gotcha. Very good. Between hardship and temporary, right, where you've got, or is it a temporary hardship? Is it a permanent hardship? And in this case, you know, the son is terminally ill and they have medical expenses, but it's a situation where, as he, you know, we've determined that there's a scenario where potentially it's a short-term matter. It's also a nail technician where she has her own salon and every chair's rented. Kristen dug deep and found that out. And it's a cash business. So we haven't put anything, waiving anything until the completion of trial on this. And then the other thing I wanted to mention that we've positioned Kristen, before her email signature used to say asset manager, out with is home retention specialist. And that's just something that you guys can either use or not use. I've noticed that that's something where, you know, Kristen, it's just she already did this, but it was one of those things where, hey, you're their advocate, and then you position that against mean old management. You know, Travis says no to everything, right? He's mean old management versus the home retention specialist. So if you guys, some of you guys are working these out yourselves, and you still have to create that separation, if you will. And if it has to be a separate email address that you're copying everybody on every time there's email correspondence, I mean, you can definitely set yourself up for that. So the question came in, what is ATR on the question box? So I know we've got some people on here. Maybe just explain. Actually, you know what? Is that coming up on the next screen? I think it is.
Some slides in the future. I'm not sure if we kind of moved it into where it fit more appropriately. Oh, there it is.
Well, there it is, but guess what? It still doesn't define what ATR stands for. So CFPB, everyone should know by now, but the Consumer Finance Protection Bureau, put together to keep us all in check. Us greedy entrepreneurs, we gotta be held in check. So that new oversight is there for us. Thank you. And ATR, talk about that.
Okay, so it's an acronym for the ability to repay. So when you guys see this, don't let it scare you. As an underwriter, if you choose to wear that hat, it's the underwriter's responsibility to deem the justification and necessity to stip for additional information or justify your decision as ability to repay. So you don't want to set anyone up for failure. So CFPB has put some rules and standards into place so that lenders have to adhere to. But really, as an underwriter, if you can justify those numbers and your DTI, which is debt to income ratios, being over what's traditionally standard, then if you can justify that, then you roll with it. But just know and understand the ability to repay comes into play because you do not want to set people up for failure. If they're making $500 a month and you're putting them into a payment of $1,000 a month, well, that's not realistic for that debtor to repay that debt at that payment capacity.
Very good. And maybe one comment here. Early on, when I got going and working out some of these loans, you know, a lot of you that have been around a little bit longer, you know that Travis and I still feel like I want to really, you know, find a way to get people paying. But there wasn't a whole lot of underwriting that I was doing. It was like, hey, you know, we cut your rate in half and cut your payment in half. Can you start paying? Right, and that was kind of that's a sweet deal. Who wouldn't want that, right? And if you pay for a year, you know, hey, we can waive some arrearages, you know, and it's just there's a whole bunch of things that we were doing, and we weren't. It slowed down the rate at which we were getting loan modifications in the door and collecting money. I will tell you that. That's something Aaron and I both commented on. But yet when we do get the underwrite, when we do go through the underwrite, we take the time to do this. One, you're out of hot water if that ever comes back to bite you in a foreclosure process, that you did document it, you have it all there, you didn't take advantage of them, you helped them keep their house, you went through this process. But number two, the thing that we're seeing in terms of the value of that note on a resale market, right? Now, I bite and scratch to hang on to every note that we're able to work out and do. And to date, we haven't sold any reperformers. And I hope, you know, I'm still want to find a way to keep them. But can you imagine a note that you're selling that does not have any of this information in the file as part of the overall loan modification, and one that does? You know, which one's more valuable? So I would definitely challenge you guys on that. So hopefully that answers your question there on ATR. I saw that.
Another reason why I added this slide and the link is because there are some second mortgage exclusions that are, that in some cases, some seconds are excluded from the ATR standard. So please read that article, and that, or we can do a webinar offline or something. It's just, it's not the correct forum to go to talk off on that, but there's some awesome information, and please read it if your majority of your portfolios are the non-performing second.
And we've got a really good comment here. Another one, we knew it was a rental and we underwrote it based on her ability to carry that, but very important comment that Gary makes, that the ATR rules, right, they bought and financed this home as a non-owner-occupied property. So CFPB rules apply to owner-occupied. What we ended up doing on this one was just underwriting it kind of under those same standards, but you have a lot more flexibility on a non-owner situation. So any comments on that, Kristen? But for sure, appreciate you bringing that up, Gary. That darn audio going in and out. Shoot.
Yeah, that's a great point. And just because these folks are purchasing these properties as owner-occupied or non-owner, situations do change. So by the time it hits up my desk as an underwriter, that non-owner could very well be an owner-occupied and can be underwritten accordingly.
Yeah, you just cut out too on that. That's too bad. Well, hopefully, guys, we're going to get this audio fixed, so thanks so much for your patience on that. So let's just hit this next screen. So real quick, this is just some quick snapshots for you on this particular loan that I'll just kind of leave them on screen for a few seconds, and if you're watching the training video, as you go through the recordings, you can kind of look at this and just see the snapshot. We've kind of gone through this, so I want to make sure you have it, and just see... you can see where we kind of backed off, and you'll notice the gap if I go back. So I go back, and you'll notice really where we just shelved and it just sat there, right? So collection efforts began, but should be included here on this timeline, Kristen, where we did decide. It's been a while since we even touched this loan. So you'll see that. Then we picked it up again. We picked it up again once we saw that there was some additional equity, and that's when we sent out that external demand letter from the attorney there, Pete Duncan. So,
yeah, and I actually sent an internal demand letter on 7/20, and it was due to expire on 8/20, and the 19th is when I actually got the power of attorney. So, and that was per the request of our attorney, was to send an additional internal demand before the external went out.
Yeah, and we wanted to have a scenario here. Like we always, it's great that we have ongoing weekly trainings, because we're always, it just, you know, and maybe that's something you guys can find a way to implement somewhere somehow. It's just, you know, you want to have something to share with the group. And if that's what the group represents to you guys, is, maybe it's an accountability, but for us, we always want to have something new to share. So we're working these files aggressively because we got weekly deadlines that we're trying to meet with these borrowers because we want to be able to share with you guys. So find a way, if you guys look at it the same way and say, I want to have something to share on the call with everybody, that'll help you really get aggressive with some real deadlines that you have with your borrowers. So again, you can see that. We got that executed agreement. Yeah, I think that executed agreement came in. They said she had it in her possession, but you know how I am. Unless we have it here, we didn't have it, and we finally got a copy of that. And you'll notice here it says the pool return enhancer workout. So this is something that looked, yes, there was some health challenges with her son that's unfortunate, but for us, we determined that it fits in the temporary hardship category. So we opted to just get her back paying again, right? And we tried to get some money down, and she was like, listen, I just don't have a lot of money down. And so what we ended up doing, just keeping it very simple. You'll see in the members area just a simple, I think it's 2 pages, or it might carry over onto a third.
It's an agreement that's there. We add the exhibit for the payment schedule breakdown and the application of funds. But if you notice, yes, we're on a trial with no down, but her monthly payment is increased from what the original note says.
And she actually agreed to that. So.
Correct.
And then just a question backing up, because someone asked what Pipe Duncan was. That's actually the legal firm that we hired to send out the external demand letter. So hopefully that fills in that gap. Again, guys, type your questions in the question box and we'll get them answered. So again, we'll revisit this. But some people, as you get in these circles and we collaborate and share best practices, there's a lot of good give and take on using just a simple trial plan agreement that's very simple, easy to understand, just to get them paying versus, hey, let me go put this, I've seen a semi-perm is what I call it, but it's a forbearance with modification agreement where it all kind of handles it within one agreement, and it's up to them to go and do that. The agreement, it takes a little bit more time and it's a little more involved, and there's a lot of legalese to it, which can be great, and you just solve it at one time and it's done, right? And it rolls into, if there's a trial, it rolls right into a permanent mod, and some people like that. We use both, and there's certain scenarios where, when we're just going back and forth with this, we have zero history with these people, and they're like negotiating their heads off, and we have no history with them. It's like, make a payment, right? Make a series of payments. So I really look forward to hearing more and more. A lot of you guys know Matt Kelly is a frequent contributor with Trustee Corps, and they work these invest in these assets as a foreclosure trustee. That's their, they're a foreclosure trustee, but they also invest in non-performing seconds. And then Philip Pay has brought in lots of new insights because he has some experience. Excited about that. Let me just take this one question before I hit the next. So when you're accepting a higher payment, how is it applied to payment and to late charges? Great question, Alan. And you just have to outline that. And it's very outlined. You'll see on the trial plan agreement, we checked the template. Check with John if the template posted is the most recent template. But I'm pretty sure we outline, okay, well, how are these payments being applied? And for us, if we have any money out of pocket on external demand letters, processing fee, loan modification fee, foreclosure fee, if we had to go that far, it always goes to pay that off first. And you'll see that actually. I think you actually see that in the next case study.
And Travis,
so,
there's an actual
great question.
We've created a section that's the application of funds, understanding the application of funds during your trial. So it kind of outlines like 1, 2, 3, 4. This is the order that your funds are going to be applied to. Of course, principal and interest, or, delinquent interest is in UPB is last, but we're getting ours first. All the lender paid fees and costs, foreclosure fees and costs, and then the late fees would be third. Delinquent interest fourth, and then finally, if there's anything left over, then it would be applied to principal.
Great point. Very good point. That's a great question because we actually had a major deal And it's something you want to address up front and spell it out in your agreements, because we had a major deal in Texas that was literally got held up at the last minute. And one of the reasons that they were not sending in this $20,000 down payment was that it didn't spell out how the $20,000 was being applied. So I definitely appreciate that question, Alan. And you want to spell that out in every agreement, whether it's a trial plan or whether it's, you know, a semi-perm or a permanent modification agreement. So good question.
The first payment being, make sure that if it's a permanent mod, that first payment is a month after, because you're accruing interest from the first to the last day of the month prior to the due date. So it can be a little bit tricky and a little bit different when you're doing permanent mods versus trial mods. You can underwrite it and make it the due date, the very next day if you wanted to, but on a permanent, you need to make sure that you're capturing the correct full month of interest before you can actually apply it to interest and principal.
Very good. Great point. And I just heard the air kick on. That's a joke in our office. John's over in the office next to the air, and he's always cold, and we're always baking. So the air, sorry guys, insider baseball. Air, come on, keep us cool. All right, so next one here. Let's just look here at the loan level ROI. So let me back up. Sorry, I want to make one quick point about this. The pool return enhancer workout, what does that mean? I put that in there for a specific reason. One, to talk about why we accepted this agreement, but two, this particular portfolio is running at about a 23% clip on the overall portfolio on our monthly cash flow, right? So once I haven't done the math on once we add $300 a month into the overall bucket, what that'll do, but between this one and the other modification you're going to see next that are both part of that particular portfolio, that pool that we bought, these are things where we just said, hey, if I don't get a settlement, but I get them paying, and maybe there's a settlement down the road, this just enhances my return of the overall pool. So we grabbed it in action. In this case, the payment was a little higher, and she took it. Said, I can handle that. My hunch is that she probably could handle a lot more based on the cash nature of her business, but we decided to take this. So hopefully that helps on why we call it the pool return enhancer. We just did a different decision. Would we maybe have accepted that deal? Probably would have accepted that one early on, but it was definitely one where we just said, let's just not be a stickler on the down payment. Let's get the $3,000 coming in. We really only, the first month covers our external demand letter, and other than that, we didn't have a whole lot of costs into this loan.
I was pretty devastated when I hit that down payment, though. I was very devastated.
Amen. Amen to that. So, question here. You use T-Value to assist in creating payments and amortization tables to share with the borrower during negotiations. And to be totally transparent with you, Gary, I love that question. We've used the amortization tables on the 10b2. That's what we've used, the app. And we're very excited. Marcus with T-Value is going to be coming down to get our whole office implemented. So, I think we're 30 plus workouts or more in just the last 12 months, and we haven't used T-Value at all. So we're excited to be able to add that tool to the team and really take things to the next level. So let me bring that up. I should unmute Gary. He's got some good comments. In this example, appreciation gave you some leverage as an alternative strategy if it was still underwater. Let's do this, Gary. If you're there, I'm going to unmute you because I want to have you talk about this. You there, Gary?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Go ahead. That's a lot for me to read. I can hear you fine.
Okay. So I was on another webinar. It's good to get information from different sources. But it was a lawyer that was on this other webinar, and in a case where this is a Florida lawyer, and it looks like in your example here that you guys waited and then you reviewed the file, and lo and behold, appreciation provided you with equity coverage, and so you had some leverage to pursue, your strategy here. So it was good. But what this Florida lawyer was saying in the case where, in his case, it was too much trouble to foreclose on the second. It may not be beneficial, and you may not have equity coverage anyways. Is that, that they sued on the second and not foreclose, and so they would still have a lien on the property, but they would sue on the second. And it was faster and cheaper because Florida is one of those states where it takes longer to foreclose. And so they sued on the second and were successful. And the thought process there is that you, first of all, have leverage in that it's another option to you that you can explain to the borrower that it's an option to you as a lender that you could sue on the note without foreclosing and get a judgment if you're successful, which you're likely to be. For non-payment, and then record the judgment, and then you would have leverage in the sense that it's difficult for them to do other financial-related activities, credit cards, borrow money from other places, if they have this judgment on their record. So you may not be able to collect in a case where you're underwater because you're going to probably just stick that file in the drawer anyway until you get some appreciation. So this was just another tool in the tool chest to be able to work a file when you really don't have any leverage yet.
Well, I like it. That's why I wanted to take you off mute to listen to it, because I'd heard recently within the last 90 days talk about people who had had success getting the judgment. And when you say the borrower, you know, making contact with the borrower, you can't do anything until they start talking to you. So anytime something's presented, it's a lawsuit that they have to answer, you know, that's real key. So, you know, I'm looking forward to hearing more case study on that, because a lot of you know we use techniques in addition to this where if it's $5,000 to foreclose, that's an uncontested foreclosure basically in Florida. We're going through one right now that has over $120,000 of equity due to a forgiveness of a big fat deferred principal amount. However the borrower did that, it's gone. It's officially gone, which created a bunch of equity for our position. And we're in a situation here where we'd love for her to work out something, but she's just being unreasonable. So we've to a certain stage, and if it wakes them up and you can engage in some additional collection activity, maybe it saves you the others. And so this is, I like this strategy that you're talking about, because I think it's a way to kind of break up that fee to see if you get any traction somewhere along the way and don't have to pay the rest of that full fee. So again, you got to have an attorney that works with you that understands you're managing, because we have a lot of Florida assets, and I would take a bunch more because they so far we're having some good track record on Florida assets. So a lot of people stay away because it's a judicial state. And it's a long foreclosure timeline. So if that's something you can stomach and that's your risk tolerance, then you might want to jump in and play. So good point. I'll just add that for Alan on suing for a judgment. Even if they do not show up for the hearing, then you get a default judgment. So great point. Thank you for sharing that. Guys, I love when we collaborate on this and really, really share like that. I think it's very helpful for everybody. When you've got additional points that you've heard, and that you know, we get into that true side of the mastermind group, right? So very good. So let's just look. I always like to look at stuff on a loan level ROI, because that's what it gets booked into my QuickBooks under that 53, 43, 61 amount. That's my basis on this particular asset as it relates to my accounting. I still approach the overall portfolio and make decisions at the loan at the pool level, but very important. So I like that return. That's a good return. And maybe just let me know that you guys are engaged on this webinar and just tell me, type in the question box, if this passes muster for you guys. If you knew what we knew before and you knew where it would go now, hopefully we see a whole lot of yeses, right, that they would do this deal. So how many of you guys would actually do that deal? Very good. So let's jump into this one, right? This is actually a big old house out in Maryland. And Kristen, chime in on this, but this was a traveling nurse who we had an attorney I mean, literally, when we first made contact, I won't get too far into this without showing you the rest of the information. Can you hear me?
Yeah, this is our QWR case study also.
That's right. We did have a QWR on this. In fact, that's how this whole thing started. That's right. With a firm that was charging the borrower, imagine this, $350 a month to represent. So it was a monthly charge. So, of course, they wanted to get this all wrapped up quickly, right? Get it wrapped up quickly, and they always acted in the best, with the best intent, the purest intent for the borrower, right? Not so much. So, literally, this thing carried on for, I mean, that guy was a real doozy, and finally, we just noticed that she fired him. I wonder why, after 11 months of $350 and it still didn't have a workout. Can you imagine that? 30, well, just unbelievable. But that's what goes on there. So the big question I have here, does this look like a property that this lady wants to go anywhere? As far as I can tell, there's some nice emotional equity. It looks like it's a little more rural. You can see that's my Farmer Joe background coming out. You can see in the field back behind there's a pivot for irrigation. So there's definitely some farming type activities going on out there. But kind of out in the country a little bit, but not too far from town. So nice big house, relatively new, since 2005, 10-year-old house, good shape. So, and, you know, let's just go through this. So fair market value, and just to confirm, Kristen, I think that's now. That's not before we bought, right? I think there's a typo there.
Well,
is this property, yeah, this property was upside down when we bought it. So if you let me know what that is, and then we'll just change it on the slides. But tell me what that is for the recording so people can see. I think that's what it is today, right? So maybe just look that up from the tape right when we bought.
Today the
so anyway, is... no, just chime in when you – I already know that's the value today because we were looking at this.
And that was the number on the tape.
Which one? This one was?
325.
Oh, wow. Well, that's interesting. So Travis has been operating as though this one was upside down for quite some time. Oh, and I know we knew because the attorneys were just they wanted to give us 12 grand, and you'll see why we didn't accept that. And they, of course, continue to charge their 350 a month. So anyway, had a nice loan mod on that first mortgage. The first lien status, 2 months past due, which I believe has since been brought current by the time of purchase. Little shaky, right? You can see the second lien UPB and the FICO score, just nasty, right, when we first bought this and just hadn't paid hardly anyone. In fact, there were nine, when we looked at title, there were nine judgments on that were actually behind our second mortgage, and the attorney sat there saying, oh, you don't want to foreclose. There's nine judgments that you're going to inherit. Like you thought we were dumb and didn't know that, but you can see how they do that. You know, so 25 inquiries just on the credit. There's a lot of credit stuff that she was trying to do, medical judgments, HOA judgment. But she did live there. And as much as she traveled, she always came back and wanted a place to hang her hat, and you saw the emotional equity there. So anyway, tax check, they were all current, confirmed the property taxes were paid by SPS. There's an impound account, no foreclosure started on the first, no records of BK found, not listed per several sources. We check a few different sources on that, and then you can just a little thing there. So it's well maintained with curb appeal. So just to let you know what we paid for that, you can see that we add in our fees that we're always going to do for a mod or processing. You can see what our purchase price is. There's our all-in at the current moment. But we're in the process. Have we written a portion of that $3,900, or have we not yet?
Well, yes, we have.
Okay, so in Maryland, we do have some attorney costs out. I think we started down the road.
Yeah, it was because she was served. We went all the way through the actual filing of the claim, the notice of default on 7/13. So the 14th is when she fired the Fresh Start firm, and she made her last monthly payment was in July, and that's what triggered it. So yes, we had to complete some milestones within the foreclosure process to get to that point. So that is including the pad, but that is what we're currently at if we had to complete the next milestone.
Okay, very good. Let's just be sure to add under that all in currently so we know and have the correct numbers here. But so it looks like that 14,144 is just a little higher based on probably 1,200, I think, if I remember seeing the invoice under the foreclosure attorney fees of that 3,900. So a little higher, but all in, if you proceed all the way, you're in 18 grand. But look at that second lien total outstanding amount due with all her arrearages. Right, so she is anxious to pay as little of that as possible. You can see she's hired an attorney. She tried to hit us at 17 grand when she fired the attorney. I'll come up a little bit, you know, so she's in the know on about how much she owes and trying to do the 10% thing. She's been well coached, right? So let's just look at what we know today. So it looks like equity. I find that hard to believe that the equity had gone up in that area on the previous slide, so that's why, you know. But anyway, still marginal. So I'm really not wanting to foreclose on this. Definitely don't want the asset back, even though the first is current and modified, and the rents, it looks like there's a little bit of a spread there. We'd do that if we had to, but we're not excited about that. The FICO's moved up slightly, but, you know, it's just kind of an immaterial move there. But anyway, you can kind of see the numbers there and where we're at. But let's talk about this, Kristen. Talk about our Borrower Connect, what the Borrower Connect campaign revealed once we got back in touch and what we did.
Yeah, and the second I got that letter that is stating that the Fresh Start firm was fired, I jumped on the phone, called the debtor, and we had a great conversation. She started crying. So I just kind of listened to her speech.
Well, how did you know the Fresh Start firm? Just tell listeners how you knew the Fresh Start firm was officially relieved of their $350 value add that they were giving her every month.
Yeah, I got an email.
How'd you get notified?
The owner of the Fresh Start firm sent me an email stating that, hey, go ahead and foreclose. We're out. You know, we're no longer representing the debtor.
And they actually said, I knew they said they had resigned or gotten fired, but they said go ahead and foreclose.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
Interesting.
They told you.
Okay, talk.
Going to get her attention. Other than that.
Yeah, well, talk about some of these things, because she really, you know, she's either very savvy or telling a real good story, right? On the whole process, but really seemed that she wanted to get something done to stay in the home.
Yeah, so her goal right now is her electric bill is running, you know, close to $1,000 during the winter months. So she wants to get solar for her whole home, and she can't do that because the solar companies won't wrap it unless you can't have any foreclosure ramifications taking place or legal ramifications taking place for them to wrap that type of loan. So she has to make good on this debt, or else you can't get the solar, which in my mind, I'm thinking, hey, that's going to benefit the bank, because she improves the property, then that's going to benefit me. So I just continued to listen, and now she's back in school to be a nurse practitioner. So then again, I'm thinking, oh, that means that she's going to get an increase of income. She's going to be getting this solar added to the property. She also told me that she's in line to get a pretty hefty inheritance, but if she chooses to file BK, her grandmother is going to remove her from the will. So there's, you know, her attorney.
So the story goes, right?
Like I said originally in the beginning of the call, you only know what people tell you, and a majority of the time it's not true, but it sure makes a good story in a case study, right? So I'm hoping that this is, you know, for real, you know, so I'm just going with it. so, but the homeowner had an appraisal done, which I have not received in my hand. Can't tell you if that 296 value is legit, or if, you know, RPR is giving it a 310 based on good condition. That 296 could very well be a legit value based on some of the conditions inside the house, which she led me to. They always paint a picture that the property is horrible, ugly, you don't want it. But so by putting her back into a permanent modification eventually, or a, you know, that'll take her out of foreclosure, and then her goal is to get that solar, which if it happens and she falls, well, we have solar installed on the home that would hopefully increase the value when we go to rent it out or sell. Her new FICO is a little bit higher, so she's working on her credit, but it's, you know, she's got long way to go as far as repairing her credit. She wants to work with me. She actually wants to remove the impound from her first lien so that it would free up some additional money for the second to pay us. She did reach out to another attorney, but I have not received a letter of representation from this new attorney. So I'm continuing to work with the debtor directly. But she told me he advised her to go ahead and file CK-13, but she doesn't want to because her family and her inheritance is more important to her than filing DK. And she seems like an honest person, and she wants to pay us back.
Very good. That's a great, great synopsis. And just for people listening, HO stands for homeowner. We'll think up a new abbreviation there for the slides in the future.
I thought about that. I think that would have been.
Okay. Yeah. So question came in, what is a QWR? And rather than go into a definition right here, I'm going to lead you to maybe link up, because we do mention it, John, in this particular webinar, link up the training on the QWR. I think there's two of them. And we have one training that we did, and then also link up the case study that the Strattons had that we helped out with. I think we had some additional.
And we provide an example
scenario, so
of the QWR could possibly look like and what could potentially be.
So it's a qualified written request, which requires a response within a certain amount of time per the law. So it's definitely something you want to know if you're going to do the non-performing note business at any level. I think your chances of you actually being served with the QWR are very high. So just get familiar with it. It's nothing to be scared of, but definitely something you want to definitely be in the loop on. So great question. All right, so reading between the lines, our home retention specialist, it was obvious that the debtor's intent is to keep the property, not wanting to miss out on grandma's inheritance. I don't know how she's going to qualify for solar with a 511 FICO score. She's got a taker, and they find out how to get those people written up. We'll have to have Aaron teach us some of that. He's got some really good friends that are doing really well in solar, and we'll figure out how 511 gets passed. But anyway, and you'll notice there why we're kind of treading lightly on this process, because based on the RPR valuation, equity is marginal here, if any. And if we had to have appraisals, if we were, you know, kind of having a spitting contest, you know, to see which one at the highest appraisal, we wouldn't want to get caught up with all the fees. So I've been in that boat already in my non-performing seconds career, and I just don't want to go there. I'd rather try and work something out, because the only one that wins there is the BK attorney. And I take that back, and it's not only the BK attorney, but obviously the homeowner, and we walk away with nothing but a unsecured lien that doesn't help us in this process. So anyway, so real quick, you can just see, I'll just show, we'll just leave these up briefly on a little few second pause here for those of you that want to go back and really look at some of the process And you can see here, you'll notice steps from the Borrower Connect campaign are happening. And you'll see here when the response to the QWR went out and the correspondence going on with the debtor's attorney until finally they were just ridiculous and we just had to make a decision to shelf it for a bit.
Travis, yep. The Fresh Start firm actually told me that they launched a CFPB complaint. And I asked for the case number. They couldn't produce it. So I went directly to the CFPB portal and went to the CFPB direct, and they confirmed that that was a false case.
Great, great point. And we, obviously these videos we host are not on public. You just heard the name of the firm. So that you can watch out for and make note of, because they do have a multi-state presence. On the other end of one of their deals, you just know you got it's an uphill battle. So very good. So again, we ran a dual track with foreclosure right on this process and then shelved it for a bit there until we got some traction. You can see multiple offers were going back and forth that got denied, accepted, countered. You know, this was an active file, and finally we just, these attorneys were just, you know, out to lunch. I mean, literally, we had some pretty good deals we put on the table for the actual borrower that they just, and we come to find out, you came to find out after the fact, right, Kristen, that they weren't even presenting them to her.
No,
is that right?
No, and he told me that I should be fired because I'm an idiot and I should be fired because of those 9 liens on title.
Unbelievable. And like you didn't know that we know what happens to those in foreclosure. So look at, this is kind of where it's winding down and the popcorn started to pop again. You can see that. And this is where it ended up, guys. So we were all in on this deal. If I remember right, 53, 52 something.
Well, the total.
And so what we ended up doing.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Your total would be 52.66678.
Yeah, so what we wanted to do is we said for sure we want to get our fees back, right? That's a profit center for us. And we already had an aggressive amount of attorney fees that are out there and really want to know what our exact number is, but that's what we assess the whole amount as though it's all been paid. We have not paid that whole invoice, but that's what I kind of said, let's get those back first, and then we would have, you know, that's what the 268 to start, then 499 until it's all been brought current. And then what we did for us on this particular case, because she really wants to settle it out, so on this particular case, she claims that she's going to pay it off. I don't know if she's going to or not, so after a year of that payment, she's going to roll into a permanent modification. But she asked for the ability to just give us 20 grand. And so I just looked at what we had into the note. You know, we wanted to make sure that we at least doubled our money in terms of a one-time lump sum. We could have been more aggressive, but based on where the equity's at, this is what we came up with. And so if she's able to go get us paid off at any point in time, she has to make all those payments within the trial plan, and then there's a one-time lump sum settlement that's due in full by August 1st, 2016, or that option to settle expires forever, and she would then need to work something out later. So let me go to questions and see what we have on this. We got a few. Oh, no, we don't. If you have any questions on this, guys, ask them, because this is a kind of a unique structure we put together based on the fees we had in, and we're always eager to hear what other people would have done or other options. So just to show you, that's where we're all in, including all the fees. And again, we'll definitely want to verify if that whole amount of the fees went out of our pocket. I think we had not quite that much, but let's just look at it as though we have the whole 5266 out.
Yeah,
and you'll see they're down. So there was the pad, right? Right on that one?
Yeah, I always use a pad.
Oh, good. That's always good. We like coming back where it came in less if we actually break down the deal. So, and you can see, so the numbers, obviously, if there's a little bit of pad in that 5266 based on legal fees, but you'll see the total amount collected there in a settlement. We're excited to get a settlement. We like that return. So if that settlement actually happens, great. If not, what we'll do is just continue on. That $499.78 is what the payment rolls into on a long-term basis. So
yeah,
anyway, the big question, go ahead.
That's for a 30-year term. I didn't cut it to a 20-year or a 15-year.
Oh, gotcha, on the $499.
Yeah, so that's like...
So the $499 is 360 months.
Yeah, so you'll get roughly $180.
So you guys can see how quick... Yeah, you guys can see how quick you have your money out of the deal. Not as quick as getting it all down at once, but you can see where it goes. So big question, guys, is how many of you would do that deal? Are there any takers on the line? Let's just see. I know we're coming down the home stretch, and we want to let you guys get off the webinar here, but how many of you guys would actually do that deal? That's a deal. It had a lot of twists and turns, and you know, we had a gentleman come in today to our office who's, you know, he sat through multiple presentations on the non-performing note business, and he's all excited about the non-performing note business, jumped into the group, and he saw, he's been able to come to the office and observe, and this happens to us a lot, guys, where people come in and say, listen, you guys look like you got a great little operation here, and you guys are doing it. I don't know where I'm going to fit this in. I thought I maybe had some time. This is a skill set that I'm not sure I want to really develop right now. And then we just ended up working with him, and he took a more passive role. So that's why I spend a lot of time really helping you guys to determine whether it's a passive or active role, because that just saves you a lot of stress. And then you can, you know, take a track, whichever track you determine to take, you know, then you can just accelerate the learning process and or let someone else do it. So,
Travis, I'm not sure, but Henry had a question a few slides back that I wasn't sure if we already answered. He asked about the UPB on the second pre-funding.
What is a QWR? I saw that for Henry. Let's just see. Oh, there's another one. Okay, yeah, sorry, Henry. Yeah, how do you guys confirm UPB on the second pre-funding? Do you want to answer that real quick?
Oh, well, yeah. So there's several different arrivals to get to there, but we always use the credit report and what the note seller is providing.
And we've heard that phone banking is a
banking is
another way. Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, sorry, my phone cut out. You couldn't hear me talking.
Yeah, no, we heard you. I think I heard you. I heard everything you said there on doing that. So
The phone
hopefully that answered your question.
Great, but I choose to do it on the banks I know for factually will not incur any types of fees, and it's all general information.
Yep, and you know there's other ways to do that too that are helpful. Just maybe connect up with Kristen on some of that. So very cool, you guys. So we kept you a little longer than we normally do, but we wanted to do that. Let me just tell you, next week's training, we had a lot of good feedback, and a lot of people want to get better at due diligence from the workshop. And so you will not want to miss next week's training. And we continuously, our insider's due diligence checklist is a living, breathing document. So yeah, there's the basics and you get good at the basics, but there's little nuances that I'm learning that just help you do it. And you just kind of keep training that muscle and you get better and better and better at it and you get faster and faster and faster at it. So I definitely would tune in on that. I'm sure Aaron will chime in. He's a turbo due diligence specialist in our office, and you know, I stand back and, you know, I think I'm pretty good, but these guys can get some answers pretty darn fast. And I love it when we are doing, you know, working on a tape together and just how fast things come together and decisions that can be made a little bit quicker. So definitely would, you know, challenge you guys to be on and aggressively get involved and engage in the process of these. And if you have questions, again, submit them through the hotline. And if you have case studies that you want to present, we can actually share over, and we'll do this in a link where you guys can just download those slides on a template. It's real simple. It's a Google presentation. You can just we use Google presentation only because multiple people can collaborate on the presentation at one time where they can't do that in PowerPoint. So as soon as you get that done, now you can download it as a PowerPoint or whatever file format you want to use, but PowerPoint to present, you know, which we strongly recommend doing if you're going to present that, you know, over lunch to somebody or at a presentation. You just don't want to be on, you know, Google presentation because you're online. So like right now we're online, it's a risky proposition. We're actually playing this presentation right out of Google Slides. So anyway, all right, guys, well, let me just see. Mr. Pei had great ideas with full due diligence information. What would be interesting is a risk management decision he's making when there is missing due diligence information. That's very, very good. I'm going to capture that. Appreciate that, Gary. We'll definitely include that. I'll take a little screenshot of that question. That's good. That's real good. All right, guys, if there's not anything else, it looks like that's the last in the question box. Please, let's get, we want to hear more from you guys and success stories you're having, lessons learned, right? And let's really turn this into a collaborative mastermind and a sharing of businesses. And we'll continue to bring what we've got. That's what we want to do. We're constantly looking to update and enhance a lot of our checklists. And so if you've got little tweaks that you want to share out with people, you know, I tell people all the time, you can keep it all close to the vest, you know, and I find out that sometimes when you do that, a lot of times you're kind of closing yourself off to other opportunities. And we found that, you know, there's lots of things we love to share, and it seems to come back to you. So anyway, look forward to next week. We will talk to you guys next Wednesday, September 2nd at 1:30 Pacific time. Thanks so much. Bye now.